Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is 12:07 on this Monday afternoon, January 4th. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. If it's Monday, that means Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business is in the studio as well. Frank. It's going to take a couple of days, I think. Frank, welcome back.
Happy New Year, Steve.
Last time I saw you, we were laughing together at Second City.
That's right. I saw you over the break. It was very nice. Reached out, grabbed your arm as you walked by.
Shook me, scared me a little bit, but after a bit, it was okay. Which was a very nice review. I have not been in a while, but
yeah, it was a fun show.
Let's talk about. I want to talk about a number of things that are in Cranes in the past few days. But before that, you and I also had a shared experience over the break where we saw The Big Short.
Yeah, I saw it just yesterday.
Which has a lot to do with the housing industry, and it's designed to be, we had Michael Lewis on a couple of weeks ago, designed to be sort of an accessible way to explain what happened to the housing market. Now, I was talking to a very smart woman earlier today who said it was still kind of over her head. Did you feel that way? Did you walk away with it?
I actually am fascinated by this particular story. So I had done a ton of reading since about 2008 on it. And so it was like a warm bath to me. You know, they have the woman in the bubble bath explaining, part of the thing. They had the cutouts where the pop culture figures, you know, that's the way I felt.
We're supposed to know who that woman in the bubble bath is.
And I didn't. Yeah, I didn't either. British actress of some kind.
My daughter told me. But yeah, so they used Anthony Bourdain would do a cutaway and just sort of explain things. I thought it was a very good movie, and it did help explain a lot of it, I guess.
And I think that the key to me was that it's likely to repeat itself at some point because, A, there was really no consequence to the primary movers and shakers. Very few, if any, went to jail. And then secondly, as one of the key characters says, it's not that these guys were stupid. It's that they didn't care because they knew at the end of the day the taxpayers would bail them out.
They'd get covered.
Yeah.
And they did. And apparently we're back at it right now.
Exactly.
So I saw that over the holiday, and I saw Talladega Nights. And what do they have in common?
I don't know. It's Will Ferrell. Oh, Adam McKay.
Adam McKay wrote them both,
yeah.
Which is kind of funny.
Yeah, he's versatile.
One's zany and one's funny, but with the message. All right, let's go down to the loop and talk about real estate because
both have car crashes.
Both have car crashes.
Metaphorical right. And physical.
Exactly. Are you done now?
Yeah, I'm
done. Okay, good. Back to the loop then, because I was reading a story about it's the CNA building and John Buck and what sort of space and big towers might still be going up in Chicago. But I came across a phrase that maybe I should have known, but I didn't. The phrase is shadow space. Can you explain that for me?
So shadow space, as it applies to office real estate, is space that will soon come available, things that are going off lease and they know that the tenants are going to be leaving, but it's still occupied as of now. So the next 12 to 18 months, that amount of space is considered shadow space.
And we are in a period of growing shadow space?
Yeah. So there's 6 million square feet of shadow space in the loop currently. They're expected to hit the market according to CBRE. And so there's a reticence to really jump into new office tower developments post-crash. This is the third downtown office tower is now being built by John Buck because CNA Financial is going to move in. There may be a fourth, but they're going to have to find an anchor tenant. So we may end up with just three this cycle because there's all this space that is going to be coming available.
So, John, which is good news for tenants, right? Right now, landlords seem to have a little upper hand, but tenants should be doing better soon.
That's right, because since 2008, the vacancy rate has not been this low. Right now, it's below 13%. So it is tight. It is a seller's market for space. But again, stick around for 12 to 18 months. And if you're a tenant, you're going to have the pick of the litter. You're going to have a lot of good Class A commercial space available.
So I don't know what our business would be, but maybe we should form a business and rent an office downtown.
I like it.
But the CNA building is moving then to this new John Buck Tower.
Right.
Interesting to me that CNA got some guarantees from Buck. Right? Are they picking up their lease or buying out the building?
Yeah, so Buck agreed. Yeah, so it's an odd deal or a common deal because Buck has agreed to buy that red CNA building on Wabash, on South Wabash there, so to get CNA to move. So they think that, you know, they can then lease that out to somebody else, and it's good. It's good retail. It's good commercial space.
So, if this shadow space is increasing, is this something that is cause for concern, or is it sort of a cycle? I mean, I'm thinking that, you know, Mayor Emanuel is always bragging about different companies that are bringing their headquarters downtown, but I read about CNA and other companies that when they do move, they're tightening up the amount of space that they need.
So, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it is a gaping maw that has to be filled. So we have brought a lot of headquarters in, and that has helped this vacancy rate drive it down. But as you say, as a lot of these people move, they're taking their second office, their next office space is, you know, 10%, 20% less square footage. So you got to get more new blood in there to fill up what people are leaving behind.
There's also competition from areas like Fulton Market, I would imagine, right? Google just moved into a nice space there.
Yeah, wherever there's transportation readily available, and especially if you're trying to attract, you know, millennial workers, you know, highly educated tech workers, that kind of thing, they want a cool place to work. And so West Randolph definitely fits that bill.
I'm interested in, and we've talked about it before, this idea of creating an innovation district where you get these minds together in one spot and have them all go meet at the protein bar, you know, where they mingle from right. from Google and from wherever, and then start to share ideas. I know that's what they're trying to do there.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, we've got a place like that. It's called San Francisco and Silicon Valley.
Right. And everyone else has been trying to duplicate
it. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, this with Google over there and some other folks going in, it looks like a little bit of a critical mass in that Fulton Market area.
Federal bench now, another story. This one written by Stephen Strahler. Is that Strahler?
Yes.
Is that correctly? In his 7 years in office, President Obama has filled half of the 22 district court seats here in Chicago without nominating a single black man.
Yeah, it's quite an anomaly because, first of all, Chicago's federal bench was the first U.S. district court to be integrated with an African-American judge back in 1961. But there haven't been any black men on this bench since 2012. Obama has appointed three black women in that time. But right now, even in Indiana, Wisconsin, and other districts in Illinois, no black men are serving in the 7th district here.
So there's not a single African American male judge in the this federal district.
Yeah, and what makes it such an odd anomaly is that nationally, the president has had a very different impact on the judicial branch. The White House numbers say that 19% of its confirmed district court nominations are African American, compared with a previous high of 16% under President Clinton. So it's not like he's not appointing folks in other districts. It's just our district.
It's not happening here.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Okay, so what does that matter? And I ask it this way because, you know, say you're looking at the Congress and you would say, well, there's not a single black man in the Congress. That's a deliberative body where different voices debate and are heard and consider and consult and argue and all of that. So you would want a representation there of different groups. When it comes to a federal trial, there's only one person sitting on the judge.
Yes.
Or rather on the bench.
Right.
So if there's 98 white men and two black men, I mean, you understand what I'm saying? It's not like different voices in there are going to present different cases. These are supposed to be by the rule of law and not something that different backgrounds are deliberating
well,
over.
I mean,
I'm being inarticulate
yeah,
there.
Yeah, no. And I think what some of the African-American attorneys and judges at lower levels are saying, that the difference is that you know, justice is not completely blind. People who sit on the bench just like anybody else, like journalists, like cops, like anybody else, bring their life experience and their perspective to the bench. And so, you know, there is a salutary effect to have a diverse bench for that reason. And also, I think one of the judges in the piece was saying that, you know, for defendants and, you know, people who enter the system to not see any faces, you know, if you're an African-American man brought to trial, to not see any faces that look like yours
right.
may make you think you're not going to get a fair shake.
I mean, I get all that. But the fact is, there's always only going to be one person on the bench.
You're right.
If the black defendant comes in and sees a white judge, it doesn't matter if there are 20 other black judges down the hall.
Yeah.
It also falls a little bit on our senators, doesn't it?
Yeah. So Senators Durbin and Kirk, going a little
senior
moment there.
He does not want you
there.
To forget that.
No, Senator Kirk. They share the submissions. They jointly submit to the president, and then the president decides in basically about two-thirds of Durbin's, because he's the Democrat of the duo, have been chosen. But there's a lack of diversity, I guess, being put forth. Also, in the U.S. Attorney's Office, there's not a lot of African-American men in the office. That used to be a pipeline, a springboard to the bench, and also in some of the big law firms. So the pipeline, I guess, is what needs some work.
So maybe the story is the pipeline, not the number, because it's a quirky little story if he's doing well nationally, but not just here.
Right.
All right, we'll focus on the pipeline during a break. We'll come back and talk to Frank about food and wine. Well, 12:21, Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Monday afternoon. Frank Sennett is along as well from Crain's Chicago Business. And I know that every year Crain's likes to look at the restaurant industry in Chicago, sort of break things down. And it looks like we're a little short on juice bars.
Yeah, so there's
I just brought up the protein bar, too.
That's right. There's a survey of 15 major metro areas in the United States in terms of where they rank in the types of restaurants by cuisine type. And as you might expect, Chicago rates very highly on pizza. We're number three. Sandwiches, number two. Yeah, you have a sandwich. And then American cuisine, whatever that is, number three. Bakeries, cafe, coffee, tea, three. Ice cream, yogurt, three. Sports bars, three. But then when it gets to be juice and smoothies and healthy stuff, 15 out of 15.
We are the last. Wow.
We don't want any smoothies, apparently.
Who's number one?
No kale.
L.A.?
Yeah, I would guess. It doesn't say on this chart. Okay. So, I did not report the story.
Well, that surprises me a little bit just because, I mean, I did bring up the protein bar, and I think they're a local operation,
they
right?
are. And we're number four when it comes to organic and vegetarian food overall. So not too bad. So just the
You can have
the
organic
subsection,
bacon, though, right?
Yeah, right. The subsection of juice and smoothies is where we're lagging. And we also, on the high end, we're only number seven when it comes to French dining. So,
Cafe Bernard, is that still on Halsted?
Yeah, I believe so. Huh? And Cochon Volant down in the Loop. Have you had lunch there yet?
I have not, Frank.
It's very nice.
After we open our office, we'll have to go there for lunch.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll be good. So, and we're middle of the road, like top third in Italian, hamburgers, Chinese, that kind of thing. So everything you would expect looking around. But we're a little behind in chicken. We're only number six. Asian cuisine, Japanese sushi, number six. And African and soul food, number six.
Okay, so are these numbers of any use other than just basic interest? I mean, because what struck me was that we tend to do better than New York or LA when it comes to keeping restaurants open, success rate.
Right. And I guess the analysis is that we have a higher percentage of chains.
Right, which is kind of a drag.
Exactly. But they don't go out of business quite with the same frequency as the independents. I think, looking at this, if you entrepreneurially wanted to look at it, you could say, maybe there's a market opportunity for my, French smoothie cart.
Interesting, right. So that we can have a French smoothie operation because...
Go up the list a little,
Because they need it or because we would be doomed, no one here wants a French
Well, movie. That would be the question you would answer. You would back your dollars
with
and
my
answer
blood,
that
sweat,
question.
And tears.
Exactly. Is it because there aren't enough options or is it because people just don't want it?
One of the things that, I don't know if it did start here, but it seems to have started here and is another thing written about, and it's the wine club at Cooper's Hawk. Now, I got to have full disclosure. I had some people on from Cooper's Hawk just a few weeks ago. We were talking about this, and I'm actually going to be at the travel show coming up later this month with representatives Tim McInerney from Cooper's Hawk talking about travel and wine and all that. And then you hand me this list of topics today, and here's the Cooper's Hawk Wine Club, which is just a phenomenal success.
Yeah, it's amazing. They're based in Countryside. It's Illinois-made wine, and it has 163,000 members. You look at other winery-based membership clubs. You have maybe at the V. Sati Winery in St. Helena, California. You can see how fancy I am.
Can't get away from the French.
6,000 members. So, it's amazing. And you get, I guess it's a screaming deal. I guess you pay $34 a month. You get two bottles of wine. You get free tastings, et cetera, et cetera. So they have just do a land office business with this?
Well, it's a business that started, I think, in the southwest suburbs. Now, I told you I was in Kansas City over the weekend or over the holidays, and there was a Cooper's Hawk there. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure they're, as I recall, in Florida as well. So they've expanded their footprint, but that's a restaurant. But the winery is here in Illinois, not in California.
That's right.
They buy their grapes from the West Coast,
yeah.
Bring them here.
So in 2015, they bought enough grapes and juice from California, Oregon, Washington, New York, and Michigan to produce 350,000 cases of wine.
Which is bigger than, like, I think if you see the Seven Deadly Sins, that
yeah,
vineyard.
That company, Michael David Winery, it's more than that whole winery puts out. So Cooper's Hawk is kind of, you know, risen as this dark horse candidate to be this major winery.
Yeah, in the southwest suburbs of the state of Illinois.
Yeah,
how crazy
is that?
And so how does it work for them? I mean, is it better? Do they consider themselves a wine company or a restaurant chain now?
I don't know. I mean, I think that the one thing that they do with the wine club is that they guarantee themselves a lot of people dropping in for those two bottles a month, and then they often will stay for a meal. So I think it's a very complimentary business.
Not too shabby, not a bad idea, and one that took off. Speaking of ideas that took off, we're going to talk a little bit later in the program with Genevieve Thiers. She was the founder of Sitter City. Have you ever used Sitter City?
I have used Sitter City.
No kidding. And yeah. How's it worked for you?
It's worked out great. I use their new app called Chime, which
that's
is
why we're that's yeah. what we're talking about.
So it was a wonderful experience. Had a great babysitter. She showed up on time and didn't burn the house down. The kids liked her.
You must have done this fairly recently, right?
Yeah, it was 2 months ago, maybe.
Okay, yeah. So Chime is something new. Sitter City's been around for a long time. They've raised millions and millions. But Chime is sort of like this new Uber for sitters.
Yeah, it shows people who are available like this week in your neighborhood. And so I had a young woman who was a student, I think a grad student or something, and she lived like within a mile of
and
where I
And you had no
I'm
worries
at.
About concerns for safety or
no,
things
I think
like that?
No, I think they do some vetting, you know, and it turned out great. I would definitely use it again. I haven't had occasion, you know, nobody likes me enough to, you know, make me need a sitter.
I think we've got a French dinner in our future.
I know, Steve.
Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business. We'll talk to Genevieve Thiers from SitterCity.com a little bit later. Nice to see you. I'll see you again next week.
Thanks, my friend.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Monday afternoon. It is the first Monday of the new year. Elise Glink is a familiar voice to you. If you listened at all over the holidays, she filled in quite a bit for me, and she's in the studio now. Elise, welcome back.
Hey, it's nice to be here.
All right, you just take the rest of it. I'm going to go get some lunch now. Who's the fella
sure.
sitting next to you?
Well, this handsome fellow is John Byrne. John Byrne and I are doing a really fun new podcast on WGN Plus called Monday Morning Marketing.
And the first one is just going up today, right?
It is. It's actually episode 14, but we taped it this morning.
Yes, we did.
Because we wanted to, you know,
and did you
hello to the new year.
And we taped it on Monday morning.
Start with number 14 just because you wanted to make it sound like you had some under your
right.
belt? Or?
It's like new checks. You know, you don't start
you
with
never,
all the
right. That's right. Exactly it. Yeah, we wanted people to think we've been doing this a while. Actually,
you have been.
And we actually have yeah. been. So John and I have been friends for 8 years or more. I can't remember.
Something like that.
He has triplets who are 18 and going off to college, go Northwestern.
Ooh. In the fall.
Northwestern?
Yes.
And my son is 18 and has no idea where he's going. Anyway, this came out of years of our kids.
I'm sorry, Lisa, I need to go back. I'm trying to digest something here.
Yeah.
You don't have triplets going to Northwestern.
All three.
All three triplets are going to Northwestern.
Yes, in the fall.
Okay, so how can we help? The number is 312.
No joke, right?
Wow, well, good for you.
That's kidding about Kickstarter.
That's a great accomplishment. I'm sorry. Back to the podcast, Elise.
Well, years ago, we started to, our kids became best friends, and then our families became best friends, and John and I both have this history of journalism and interest in local media. We both run these kinds of content marketing companies now, And we've had conversations for years about what's going on with marketing and media and the real world, and this podcast grew out of that.
Right. Instead of just talking to ourselves, we figured we'd talk to ourselves right. and other people. And
so now you record it and you're never sure if you're really talking to anyone else.
Yeah, exactly. We have no idea.
Right.
But you will be, because these are available at WGN Plus. And if people want to read up on them, they're at iTunes now too, right, if they want to work ahead.
Yeah, you can just you can go to any Google search engine and type in Glink and Burn and Monday Morning Marketing, and it'll pop right up.
The, if you use the podcast app too, that'll work.
The thing about, you know, the even just the word marketing almost seems passé in a way, right? Am I right about that? I mean, people don't say, I'm going to go study marketing anymore. I have a daughter studying communications. I don't hear people say marketing, although it is marketing. They're just using different words.
Well, or they use, you know, Medill still has the integrated marketing communications, you know, okay. so they're sort of combine it with a lot of different things too. But I think, you know, Kellogg, I think up at Northwestern still has a marketing major or whatever.
I didn't mean to impugn it at
all. All the chief marketing officers out there are like, what? No, no, no. We don't do anything? Don't tell.
So I've worked for a lot of lawyers, and of course that sort of gives you your own sort of complex.
A lawyer, terms, that's another thing I've never heard of. Are there still lawyers? No, what I meant by that, though, is it just the way things have developed? Now, you've used the phrase several times, content marketing,
right?
And so that's the idea. It's not so much putting flyers on people's cars or in their mailboxes. It's getting people to listen to a spot or to view a spot for, in some ways, another reason.
Well, the broad definition of marketing is really, how do you raise awareness of any product, any service, any individual, right? That's really what we're doing. How do you get yourself in front of, or your product in front of, a prospective buyer? And when you think about that in the new digital world, in a world we talked about this morning, which is mobile first all the time, you know, that has really changed. It isn't so much about flyers anymore. It isn't about physical marketing, although we still have a few newspapers, including the one in the building we're standing in.
God bless it.
Thank God. But yeah, but it is different. And so that's what we talk about kind of week in, week out on the show, is things that we see in the world that are going right, that are going wrong, or from our own personal experience working with our clients.
And you said mobile now all the time.
Mobile.
I mean, I think so. I mean, I think nearly two-thirds of Americans or adult Americans own a smartphone. And so that, and a ton of other people, including, you know, 18 to 25-year-olds, it's their primary way that they're accessing the internet is on their phone. And if you were to ride the L or the bus on a day-to-day basis, you would see and maybe be one of the people who are constantly have some sort of, you know, neck ache from always being looking at their phones.
I'll tell you what, John, if you were to sit at the Christmas dinner table.
Or any dinner table.
You'd see the same thing. But there was a study out a couple of weeks ago, or a survey, right, about internet connectivity in the home and how it has dropped. And that's because people now are relying more and more on smartphones.
Absolutely.
And that's the, you know, I've always done my best. I think I've stayed with it pretty well. But that's where it gets a little trickier for me, because I still want my newspaper in the morning. I'm beyond that. I still want my laptop at home.
Right.
But fewer and fewer of us are even using laptops.
They are. That's right. And when you look at how people are marketing and how you're thinking about, as a company, how you're trying to reach people, if you're not thinking about mobile first, if you're not thinking about how content is appearing on a phone before you think about how it appears on the desktop, you're missing the boat, I think, to a great extent. You have to look forward.
Okay, so tell me about that. That's what that interests me. How do you, if you're presenting a product, you know, I think early on we thought, well, we'll just make the website available on the phone.
Right.
But you have to have a completely different design, don't you?
Yeah, you do. And I mean, what's happening now too is that the way that websites in general, even on your laptop or your desktop, the way that they look, that now you scroll. And it used to be click, 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 click. And now it's you scroll up and down. And the reason you scroll up and down is not because of it looks so good on a desktop, but because that's how you use your phone.
Interesting, right. So you're scrolling with your thumb.
Exactly.
One way or another.
Right. And you need, and it's interesting because you have to find ways to kind of fly in. So if you think about the New York Times app on your phone, right, you can go section by section by scrolling to the right or left,
right,
up or down for the actual individual stories. You know, on the left side, you pull in and that gives you kind of your digital navigation. If you look at the way most apps, content apps or companies that have content heavy, that's what they're all trying to do now, is be very clever in ways for this tiny little, you know, 4x6 mm-hmm. instrument that sits in your pocket to make it do more things for you.
When a guy's running a dry cleaning shop, you know, in Melrose Park, and he wanted to create a website It was very difficult for a while, but then, you know, you go to WordPress.
Absolutely.
And you build your own little website.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that that guy in Melrose Park with the cleaners might have a harder time creating an app for his phone. Or am I wrong?
Well, I think that most of the WordPress sites now are mobile-friendly or mobile-first. So when you create a WordPress site, it automatically will translate down. There are some things that have to be done, and I know because we just built a new EliseGlink.com site. And
I'm sorry, John, did you get the address? What is it again?
EliseGlink.com.
Oh, very nice.
I-L-Y-C-E.
That's right. Or anything close to it, because Google now knows that people have no idea how to spell my name. But, you know, it was interesting because there's a little like, oh, sign up for my newsletter, but it didn't translate correctly to the mobile. The rest of it did. That didn't. And so my web guy had to go in and make a few adjustments. And I think that's what your cleaners is going to have to think about, is how does that work? What's the location stuff that you can connect to your website so that other people will be able, when they come near his, he can, you know, people who are neighbors, he can target through Facebook or through Twitter or through some of the other apps that are out there and use the site as kind of an anchor.
Well, and people are developing apps specifically for certain sort of sectors like dry cleaners and restaurants and
correct.
All these and stores that you can actually go, and before you even go in, you can say, I want to pay for my cleaning, I'll pick it up at 4:00, or
right.
When will my cleaning be ready?
You've got the shell already created.
Exactly, and they've market these toward the small businesses.
So can our friend in Melrose Park, is it easier for him to market his dry cleaning business today than it was 25 years ago, or is it harder? Because in a way, I think it might be harder.
I think in a way it actually could be, depending on what's happening. You know, I work with a couple of businesses who are very local in scope, and they've been sort of entranced by the siren call of Yelp and all these other
right.
sort of broad-based Yellow Pages online things, and they can cost a lot of money. But they don't necessarily get the readership in the same way that, you know, if you were to be able to make sure you have your listing on Google, because everybody goes to the Google. But also local publications, believe it or not.
The Yellow Pages.
Or those coupon books that you get in the mail, right?
Right.
I mean, a lot of contractors especially use those things.
Yeah, I think we're in a unique time where you still need the old blend of marketing, where for a local dry cleaners, you still want to be a part of the Chamber of Commerce and you still want to be a part of the book that the newcomers to town get a coupon for.
Right.
But at the same time, when somebody types in Dry Cleaners Melrose Park, you want to be the first name that pops up because you'll get the call.
Yeah, and if you're not there, you're not going to get that pizza order or whatever.
Or whatever it is, and that's become
right.
kind of
or if you don't have and if you don't have a way to order that pizza online, whether you pick it up or have it delivered, but ordering online and taking the credit card.
That's John Byrne along with Elise Glink, the co-hosts of the podcast Monday Morning Marketing. You can listen to it at WGN Plus. Thanks, you guys, for coming in. I appreciate it.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome
you're
back.
Listening. Thank you. Welcome, and thanks for sitting in. Can we do this again sometime?
You bet.
Sure.
You're listening. Anything. What? Go ahead.
I think Thursday.
Thursday?
Yeah.
Okay. Can we do it 12:35 Thursday?
Yeah, sure. I'm free.
Sorry, I'm not. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:51. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand in today. Launched in 2001, Sitter City was one of the earliest online platforms for connecting parents to caregivers. Sitter City, a big success, raised, $36 million over the past 6 years in venture capital. And they've moved on now to Chime, sort of an Uber version of that. The co-founder of Sitter City is in the studio this afternoon, Genevieve Thiers. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
I just called you a co-founder. Did I demote you?
No. I mean, there were many, many, many people that have driven this truck over the years. I'm just one of them, but I'm happy it's working.
But you were in the, you recognized early on this idea of finding a babysitter online.
I did. I was a sitter. And it's funny because the whole time I was CEO of Sitter City, I was actually really the sitter nanny. And ironically, it was not because I was having twins, but around the time I was having twins, you know, like it just seemed natural for me to segue over and do a couple other things I hadn't been able to do. And now I'm a mom using my own service thinking, this is amazing.
I don't know who came up with this, but she's brilliant.
She's brilliant.
Sitter City took off fast, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we had a couple years where it was a little tough because it was the .com crash. So funnily enough, I actually had more time than most entrepreneurs to grow and create a good MVP. And so by the time I was raising funding, frankly, a Series A, we were already over $3 million in revenue. It was a different time.
I'm thinking of, when I think of it, I say, well, I don't know. Am I going to go online? We'll get to Chime, but let's start with Sitter City.
Yeah.
Even back. Am I going to go online to find a babysitter? And it just seems a little hinky.
Yeah.
But when I think of my own experience, when we had our daughter, we lived in the city. My wife, Cook County put out a list of potential babysitters at the
wow.
time. Like caregivers, not evening, but you know.
It's really useful, actually. Go city.
Well, yeah.
You know, most cities were not.
I think you had to get it by mail at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
But
wow.
that's how we found ours. So it's not as if it was a long, fast family friend. There's always a bit of trust involved. And so Sitter City just sort of brought that into the 21st century.
My first job and my only job really for Sitter City, you know, primarily has been to be the evangelist, you know, although I do many other things for it. But, you know, it's one of those things where I had to convince moms one by one and then group by group and finally, you know, across the nation that it's safer than hiring your next door neighbor to use Sitter City. Because, you know, you go online, the background checks, the sitters have run them and posted them for you. The references are right there to call or email. You see over 42 different pieces of information about this girl. You know, it's usually female, so I'll say this girl. You know, you see videos, pictures. They're major. I mean, you know, it's just one of those. I just was always surprised it hadn't existed before I built it.
Big success. Well, that what is that a sign of? Is that a sign of great creativity, of insight? No, really, I mean it when
Morphe you... need. I mean, you know, it's a sign of absolute critical need. People weren't building for moms.
But I'm talking about
then.
Your brain in a way, because this happens to other people when they create an idea and they're like, well, this is pretty obvious. Why didn't others think of it?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I build for me, you know. I wish other moms were out there building for moms too, because, you know, a lot of us just get so socked sideways by the kids, but I have solved that. So please go to Sitter City Moms if you are a budding entrepreneur and you know, or chime a sitter now. It's about chiming a sitter now. But I mean, use what I've built to get out there and build more companies for moms, because not enough of us are building for us.
All right, let's go to Chime, described as an Uber for babysitting. Right?
Yeah, so we
just got tickets to the Hawks game on Wednesday. I need a babysitter.
Chime a sitter.
Go to Chime.
Yeah, seriously. No, it's wonderful. So we knew we needed an on-demand model. We've been working on it for years. But it's not easy because obviously, you know, Sitter City has, we've served over 10 million at this point, but we have 3 million active caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not only in the U.S., we're actually in Canada and the U.K. as well. So what we had to do was start going city by city and pre-screen, you know, bring into the office and interview, you know, a subsection of these girls essentially to become Chime caregivers. Because the way that Chime works is you go to the app and you basically say, I need someone Saturday from 9 to 12. And then, you know, you click submit and you see a little timer and then three caregivers pop up. But we've already screened them. That's
right.
The difference.
Sitter City,
time.
You had a little responsibility as a parent to screen the sitter. With Chime, more of that is done for you.
It's done for you. So Sitter City really broke the model. Parents were paying $2,000 to a nanny agency. That was not sustainable. It was ridiculous. And so what Sitter City did was say, hey, mom, if you screen them yourself and we'll give you all the tools, it should be only $40. So we changed the game and replatformed the model. Now we're building Chime on top of it because Chime is the most elegant solution actually to the problem. And Chime's beautiful. Our caregivers are also super screened. I mean, we bring them into the office right now. They do an interview. They do a background check. They do an ID verification. And then we scrape over 300 social media sites. Only one in five make it.
Wow. Only one in five people who want to work for Chime make it.
Exactly. I don't even know if I would make it because I think I have a speeding ticket from a few years ago. I mean, it's really very, very, very tough. So it's kind of awesome because when they pop up there, you can just click, you know, I like Cindy, and she shows up.
Genevieve Thieves is in. So how do you, is it Chime.com?
Head to HelloChime.com. Hello. If you Chime. Want more information, but please just go to the App Store and download Chime today. Your first use is free. It's $50 off.
Okay, Genevieve Thiers, you may have read about her when it comes to startups and women in business in Chicago, or maybe you read her name on a playbill recently. Performed at the
yeah,
opera, the
I
Civic
played
Opera.
Prascovia in The Merry Widow at Chicago Lyric Opera.
For real. I mean, you know, a lot of times
Renee
they have
Fleming
people in for one night or something.
Thomas Hampson. No, I was there the whole time. We did 10 shows in one dress. It was 3,800 people in the house pretty much every night. I remember the first opening night, and Sir Andrew Davis was conducting. The whole thing still doesn't seem real, Steve.
That's nice.
This has been my bucket list dream. And so, like, I just remember opening night, I kept thinking, on stage, there's Sir Andrew, don't mess up, you know.
More frightening than launching a business.
Much more. For me, this is kind of the thing I always didn't chase, you know. So Sitter City will always be my first baby, and, you know, obviously I have two more now that are four and they're nuts, but, you know, I mean, the bucket list item was really performing.
Well, it's,
you know,
not a fluke. I mean, you studied music at Boston College, right?
Studied
and opera at Northwestern.
Yeah,
Where you came up with the idea of Sitter City.
Actually, no, I came up with Sitter City at Boston College before Northwestern. And what was funny is the
Genevieve,
time...
never correct the host.
I was getting the opera stuff, you know, the training. I was getting the master's degree in opera while I was running Sitter City. So it was one of those crazy things.
I want to, but we've got less than a minute left. I bring all of that up to point out to parents and to students that you can study what you love and you can pursue one dream, and it doesn't close the door on others and huge success in other areas later in your life.
I don't believe this generation believes in that jack of all trades, master of none. I personally refuse to believe in it. I think you can do multiple things wonderfully. And I personally have put in my over 10,000 hours on both. You know, you do have to put in those 10,000 hours. That's true. But you don't just have to put it in on one thing. You know, frankly, I also am a writer and I would like to do even more of that in the future. So, you know, it's just a matter of putting in the time. You have to be good. I auditioned for 4 years before I got anything.
It's wonderful to meet you, Genevieve Sears.
Thank you.
All right, hope we can talk again. You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Bill and Wendy are just around the corner.